Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
One ticket, please. Now, almost everybody's here.
Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, she's at home.
Yeah, she's at home.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Ucady. Thank you to Gary Dieter for spending the last hour with us. Right now we're going to talk to Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. What's up, Jesse? How you doing, man?
How's it going, Stephen?
Ready for the game tonight, man. It's, you know, we just got done with the opener against Arizona. Turn right around and get ready for one of the marquee matchups of the year. But unfortunately, some key members of the team not going to be playing. So let's start with Trent McDuffie. How damaging is that to the Chiefs' plans? He looked good in the time that he played on Sunday. But now you've got even more young members of the secondary that have to step up. Tell me what the impact of losing Trent McDuffie for tonight will be.
Yeah, it's important for the Chiefs. You know, it's interesting. I feel like we haven't seen Trent McDuffie make a lot of plays, but I feel like even in the preseason, nobody was really targeting him. So it's sort of that's what you want, right? If nobody's going after you, it's sort of a level of respect. But unfortunately for the Chiefs, he'll be out at least 4 weeks. I think of what the Chiefs did in the preseason now and what they did with their roster. You know, we thought for a long time, Lonnie Johnson, we thought Baker. I mean, there's a lot of good names that were kind of going up and down. You're like, oh, they need a veteran back there. But it's kind of like the burn the boats analogy. You know, they took all rookies. They kept all rookies. They made their decision very easy. So now you rely on Jalen Watson. You rely on Joshua Williams. And those are your options. And, you know, the thing about Herbert, and when we read these articles in the offseason about how good he is processing and gets to his third read, his fourth read, his fifth read, and you know, I know Eric Eager comes on with you guys with Seren Petro later. Pro Football Focus talks about the weak link system that cornerbacks are. Basically means if you have a weak link and you have a good quarterback, they can pick on that. And so if you have three cornerbacks doing their job and one doesn't, a guy like Justin Herbert can make you pay for the fourth one. So this will be an interesting test for the Chiefs. Now, I will say this. Jalen Watson has been amazing in coverage, whether it's been preseason games or it's been the first game we saw him knock a pass away from A.J. Green, that opener. It just, for the Chiefs, you just sort of hold your breath a little bit because it's a rookie. You know, they're going to try to go after these guys. They're going to try to expose them, and there could be big plays as a result of that. But, again, the Chiefs made this decision a month ago and with cuts that they were going to rely on these guys and trust them moving forward. And this is kind of where the rubber meets the road a little bit. They're going to trust those rookies tonight, and they've got to be good if they want to beat the Chargers.
I don't want to wait until we see what happens tonight for people to decide this. So I'm going to get your opinion on this now. You mentioned you know, a couple of veteran cornerbacks being let go early in camp because they felt comfortable with the performance of the rookies. And so do you think that the Chiefs will end up regretting not keeping a veteran corner? Because in a perfect world, they weren't going to have to dip into that depth so far this early, right? Because one game and there goes Trent McDuffie. Do you think they will end up regretting not having a veteran corner as insurance, or no matter what, do you think this is the right course? Go young. There might be some speed bumps, but in the long run, this is going to end up being the right decision.
No, I don't think they will regret it. And I think the play so far from guys like Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson show why. The other thing about this is when we go, you know, when we talk about the Chiefs going young also means sometimes going faster or going more talented. And, you know, there's a play like the Juan Thornhill play where he breaks up a pass against Arizona. You saw the closing speed there. You saw younger legs. You saw a guy, okay, he wasn't there exactly the moment he had to be to start with, but he can recover and make that play. Jalen Watson on that breakup with A.J. Green, same sort of thing. You know, off the line was not perfect from him, but he has the closing speed to make up for it, has the long wingspan. He's very tall. And so you have some gifts to make up for mistakes. It's just the ability to process, and you wonder, okay, how reliable is that going to be? But, you know, you saw last year sort of what happened when you take the safe option. The safe option for the Chiefs a lot of times was Daniel Sorensen. And that's the reaction. And, you know, Daniel Sorensen had great moments for the Chiefs earlier on. He was great with the film study. We hear all the time about how he was the guy that always was studying the film and making himself as prepared as he could be. But as you lose a step, as it gets a little bit further down your career, that only takes you so far. So I think the Chiefs made the right move in that. I don't think they're going to regret it. But it also kind of speaks to the big picture of this offseason we've talked about, where if you trade Tyreek Hill, it kind of is a you're trying to win now, but you're also putting an eye toward the future to try to figure out how can you make all these pieces work around Patrick Mahomes and improve other areas. And so this seems to be part of that. If you can get a fourth-round guy in Joshua Williams, a seventh-round guy in Jalen Watson to be contributors down the line, man, you've really shortcutted your way to being successful the next 5 or 6 years. So could there be rookie mistakes tonight? Yes, but I think the Chiefs made the right move, and I think they are going to pay the dividends or reap the benefits of that here coming up the next few years if those guys turn out as good as they expect.
I'm with you. No matter what happens, I'm glad they did it. I'm glad they moved on from DeAndre Baker and Lonnie Johnson. I'm glad that they're sticking with the young guys tonight, because best case scenario, they play well, they win, and they build confidence. And then by the time McDuffie gets back, you're talking about a really deep, young group of corners. Worst case scenario, they have some bumps in the road and they have some growing pains, but still that's giving them necessary experience and they end up better for it in the long run. Either way, in the grand scheme of things, it's better for the Chiefs, but I'm not going to wave the white flag here. I do think, because look, it's training camp and everything else, but I'm with you, man, watching them up there, really impressed with their length, with their athleticism, with their speed. And I'd rather go that way, because the safe route would have been Lonnie Johnson or DeAndre Baker. And I saw enough of DeAndre Baker last year. Like you said, the weak link, that's one of the things that I've tried to highlight about the Chiefs this year. They got, not just corners, they got rid of a lot of those weak links. Like, who was attacked last year? Dan Sorensen, Ben Neiman. The ability to throw draft picks and money at those weaknesses because of the Tyreek Hill deal, I think that eliminated a lot of those weak links on the defense, and that's why I like overall this defense much better than the top-heavy guys with, you know, Hitchens and Matthew making that amount of money and going with the safe route. I like what they have as far as the makeup of the youth and athleticism with this defense.
Yeah, and it feels like talking on both sides of your mouth here, because, you know, I asked Andy Reid early last week, how do you feel about your secondary? Because there are so many newcomers. There are so many young players. And he said, well, kind of like we're talking about, he said, you know, he likes them, he's comfortable with them, but there's probably been hiccups against Arizona. That might be kind of the underrated storyline here, is there were no hiccups against Arizona. Like, I kind of thought for both the offense and the defense, you know, it could look really good for 80% of the time, but then if you throw an interception, that can cost you 7 points or 10 points. Or, hey, if your defense holds up first down, second down, but then Kyler Murray gets out of the pocket and throws a bomb down the field and gets a 70-yard touchdown, all of a sudden this game becomes close when the whole rest of the game wasn't close. But the Chiefs just kind of chugged along, and there were none of those breakdowns. But still, you know, having said all that with the Chiefs and you know, what happened to them in that first game, that also is just one game, and it's only a one-game sample. So we've seen this with Mahomes. Mahomes has had times where he picks on good defense. We saw that throw to Kelce. I mean, that window he had on the play action last game, and sometimes really good quarterbacks can make you pay even if you are playing pretty good defense. So this will be a much better test for the Chiefs tonight, because the Chargers and Justin Herbert, we saw some throws from him last week. Sometimes there are throws where he just makes them, you're playing pretty good defense, and he makes you pay anyway. So less margin for error for the Chiefs this week than it was against Arizona, but definitely a good start, an encouraging start that they did not have any breakdowns last week.
Well, and this might be touching on what you said earlier, but you if you don't have the athleticism to hang with guys at the NFL level, it doesn't really matter if you know all the responsibilities. You can do everything right and still get burned, because the margin of what is an open receiver and a covered receiver in the NFL, it still blows my mind. I mean, it's not much. You know, a guy just having his shoulders past you is open in the NFL. And so if you have lost those steps that you're talking about, okay, great. You know where you're supposed to be, but you physically can't get there. If you've got a young guy that's got the athleticism and the length and everything to cover somebody, he might have some moments where he's not in the right place, but in the moments where he is doing the right thing, he actually has the physical ability to make the play. And that's kind of getting back to what you're talking about. See, they're just so much more athletic this year on defense than they were.
Yeah, I'll make a reference that you'll appreciate, Nate, but it's kind of picking your shortcut, right? This goes back to me, KU basketball, and Remy Martin. Like, coaches want control. They want to know what is going to be expected out there, and they want things to be executed the way they want. For a long time, that's why Remy Martin wasn't playing. He didn't know the place. You know what I mean? Like, it was evident. He didn't do what Bill Self wanted him to do. But then we saw in the NCAA tournament, what happens if you free his mind and you make things pretty simple and he goes out there and plays? He's pretty good. You know what I mean? His shortcut is he's a really good basketball player. You can get to the rim. He's quick. He's fast. So, again, you kind of have to balance that. You know what I mean? Like, there is a comfort at night, I'm sure, for Steve Spagnuolo, and there was, to know that certain guys in there are going to be in the right spots every single time when he calls a defensive play. And if they get beat over the top because Justin Herbert makes a perfect throw, you can live with yourself better than, okay, this rookie's eyes were in the wrong place, and that's the reason that whole play blew up. So, yeah, it's fascinating to kind of watch here, and it's fascinating to kind of think about the different ways. Sometimes I think coaches are a little hesitant because they would rather just run things the way you run them, and if the other team beats you, they beat you. But there is something to be said about bringing your Remy in and having him, letting him cook, and that's sort of what the Chiefs are going to be doing tonight. They're going to let their athleticism, their rookies cook, and see what happens with it.
Okay, so I asked you what the impact would be for the Chiefs not to have Trent McDuffie. What is the impact of the Chargers not having Keenan Allen?
Yeah, so it's a big one, obviously, and he's burned the Chiefs in the past. Big body, a guy that we talk about. The window can be small, and he can go up and get it. I think I might be more interested in J.C. Jackson, honestly, on the defensive side. Sounds like he's a game-time decision for tonight. But it's so funny. We spent the last few months, guys, discussing these other teams in the AFC and what they did in the offseason to chase the Chiefs, right? I mean, J.C. Jackson, you got Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball over the place. What do you want to do? You want to go get cornerback? Or hey, let's go get another pass rusher. You know, go get another guy to put outside of Bosa to make sure that this is havoc on the Chiefs. So it'd be a real shame if you go and you get J.C. Jackson, you commit all these resources, you've got your quarterback on his rookie deal, kind of like the Chiefs were 3 years ago, trying to commit all these resources to go chase down the Chiefs, and then you don't get him for this first game. That would be a big impact for this game. But Keenan is Keenan, and I think the only thing I will say is kind of like we had these discussions with Patrick Mahomes in the offseason. If you have a quarterback who is good, who can get through his reads, who can find the open receiver, it would probably be mitigated a little bit when you lose a weapon like that. And we saw that with Patrick in the first game. Probably going to see that with Justin Herbert in the second game. I think my eye is going to be more on J.C. Jackson, because that seems like a dude they brought in to beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay, so this may be more of a philosophical question. And I know you always have your big phone book of analytics with you. You could look into that. I would like to hear from you and Nate Buchady. And so you said you bring in, you know, other teams went out and, you know, you get an elite pass rusher. You can go out and get an elite corner to try to combat Patrick Mahomes. Well, the Chargers try to do both in bringing in Khalil Mack and then also J.C. Jackson. If you were going to say you could only go after one, what do you think is a more important weapon in trying to combat Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense, an elite pass rusher or an elite corner?
Good question. I would say that from the rankings that you see online of sort of the most valuable positions, obviously quarterbacks at the top, I'd have to look at the exact ones, but it seems to me that edge rusher and cornerback are both very valuable up toward the top, and I think edge rusher is just above it.
And it depends on the specific player, but just like theoretically, if you could only put your resources into upgrading one of those spots, I'm just curious, what do you think is the best way to spend your money?
We've seen the Chiefs be successful in the past where they sort of just loaded up a defensive line and kind of the rest was the rest, mm-hmm. you know? And sort of that first level breaks down, it's hard for an offense to operate. So I would probably go edge rusher, and it probably would kind of go back to the discussion we had before, because one cornerback helps you, absolutely. But one cornerback doesn't impact the entire play because you have to have other cornerbacks. So it's sort of better to have a group at a base level that can be competent at that position than have one really good guy and then other guys you can't rely upon. So I would say the pass rusher, because that's sort of the opposite, right? Like, if you're thinking the offensive line is a weak link system. You can have four guys blocking well. If one doesn't, then Khalil Mack gets the sack and you lose yardage on that play. So I would probably go with the pass rusher, because if you have three bum pass rushers but one good one and he makes his play and does his job, you can potentially disrupt a play and really move an offense back. So I would probably go with pass rusher on that one, but it sure seems like from all the studies out there that cornerbacks are pretty important too.
Nick Buckley.
That is a pretty good breakdown right there. I mean, I guess the only way you could say is if there's a Revis Island type of guy that can take away a third of the field and then you get to roll all your coverage to the other side, maybe that has the knock-on effect that you're talking about, where your weak links can be covered up a little bit. You know,
look at the Chiefs. They spent a first-round pick on both.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, and I mean, the other thing about this we have to mention, like, J.C. Jackson's been really, really good. Like, it, I mean, there's sort of degrees here of, like, how good you are, and he's been elite level to, like, it's almost better to not throw his direction. It's better to throw the ball on the ground.
They should rest
like
him.
That sort of good.
It's interesting to see the way the game always evolves, right? Because for the longest time, it was quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, and corner. And it was foolish to draft a safety early in the draft. And then all of a sudden, and I know Isaiah Simmons, it wasn't his proudest day this past weekend, but I think that actually underscores a little bit of why that position, especially that hybrid position, is so important. And maybe we see that Derwin James is, if he goes out and plays a good game against the Chiefs, the difference that it can make having a guy that can cover Kelce and do all those other things versus a guy that can't.
Well, the Cardinals thought they had that guy.
Yeah, they did think they had that guy, but it goes to show you how important that job is now, because it used to be, oh, it's crazy. You don't draft a safety to play, you know, that important. But with all the emphasis on the tight end and the slot receiver game in the NFL these days, the other thing used to be the interior defensive linemen, not as important as the edge rushers, right? And then all of a sudden people started saying, wait a second, the quarterbacks get rid of the football before the edge rushers can get there anyway, so now you need somebody that can collapse the pocket and move the quarterback off his mark and all those things. So I don't know. That was one of the things I love about the sport, though, is that as the game evolves, then some of those priorities evolve a little bit too, right?
Yeah, and I know my analytics phone book gets a bad rap here, but this is the study of the NFL, right? I mean, these are decisions that Brett Veach has to make. And when he trades a guy like Tyreek Hill, you have to figure, okay, what is most important? And obviously, the quarterback's most important. So getting that settled is 90% of your work to start with. But, yeah, I mean, he had lots of decisions this offseason. And we can talk about the defensive line. In the past, when the offensive line struggled, he went and remade the whole thing the next year.
Yeah.
And this year, the defensive line struggled, and they went about it a different way. Like you said, Stephen, they haven't committed resources in the first round to a cornerback. They traded up and did that this year with Trent McDuffie. So all these things are sort of fascinating offseason topics, and the teams that get them right are probably the teams at the top of the standings right now.
Well, you just look at it. Last year, the Chiefs rebuilt that offensive line and to pretty much rave reviews, right? Like, I mean, the center seems great. Trey Smith seems great. The Tooney seems great. It's only one game in, but the Bengals tried to do the same thing this offseason, and Joe Burrow was getting hit just as much as he did last year, threw some picks, was under pressure, doesn't look through the first game like they got that right. Now, we could also say, hey, Orlando Brown didn't look great at the beginning of last year, and he got better as the season went on, so maybe that'll happen with the Bengals too, but it goes to show you, just because you try to do it, for the old Chiefs fans out there that remember the Dick Vermeil era, they tried to rebuild their defensive line like every year.
Mm-hmm.
They threw draft picks at it. They traded up to get Dorsey. They drafted guys early and often, and they kept getting it wrong. And that's one of the things about it, like this thing with the Chiefs draft this year. Okay, you throw those resources at it, that's great. If you get it wrong, it really screws you, because then you got to throw more resources at it in the next draft, right? But like you said, on the flip side, if they get it right with these guys, now they don't have to worry about that, and they can go address other issues going forward.
Well, and that's why we cannot overstate the value of if you hit on seventh round draft picks and those guys become players for you for 4 years. I mean, that is, you know, you think about baseball and sort of what the Royals are doing right now, hitting wise with their lineup. The great encouraging part is that you can basically not squint too hard and see their lineup in 2025, 2026, 2027 with a bunch of cheap players. It allows you the flexibility to go out and trade for pitching if you need it, or go get more of something else if you have the resources to do that. But that's where the Chiefs are at right now. And you mentioned it. If having draft picks is having draft picks. Hitting on the draft picks is what's important. And that's why we talked about this a few weeks ago. But like I kept saying, the story of training camp is these rookies. The story of training camp is these guys are ahead of what they thought. They keep nine of them. I remember the pre-draft discussion, people were like, you know, we were talking about, do they have enough spots for these rookies? They have enough spots for 10 or 11 or 12 draft picks. The Chiefs kept all of them. I mean, they put one on the practice squad in Nazi Johnson, but they kept nine of their guys. And two of those surprises, if we're being honest, were these two cornerbacks, you know, Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson immediately coming up to the roster and being ready to play football. So, yeah, it's one thing to have resources. It's one thing to have draft picks. It's another thing to hit on them. And, you know, if you look at – you mentioned it, Nate, last year. If you're looking at Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, Nick Bolton, and you add that to potentially Sky Moore, Trent McDuffie, George Karlaftis, whatever else comes out of Leo Chanel, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams.
Cook, the safety.
Brian Cook.
Yep.
That's a foundation for winning for a long time. If the Chiefs got that right, and so far the returns have been really good.
Like that first draft was no good. There's no way. You know, Breland speaks. Nottie's still here, but yep. Dorian O'Daniel, Armani Watson. But then even the second draft, and I know more's been expected of him because of who he was drafted in front of. But in 2019, Mecole Hardman and Juan Thornhill in the second round, you've got a lot of production out of both those guys. Colin Saunders still on the team, but Rashad Fenton was an outstanding sixth-round pick. Nick Allegretti was an outstanding seventh-round pick. The next year, I think we all agree no one loves the running back in the first round, but Clyde, he's a big part of the team, you know, whatever you want to say. But Willie Gay, the second round, Legarius Sneed in the fourth round, Mike Dana in the fifth round, and then, like you said, impact players between Bolton and Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Noah Gray still has a chance to be a good player on this team. That's a lot of hits, man. A lot of hits.
I mean, you think about it, a lot of times they talk about, okay, fourth, fifth, sixth round, seventh round. You're just looking for special teamers. You're hoping the guy makes the roster. I mean, some of those fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders you just mentioned, those aren't like, oh, we hope they play special teams, guys.
Right.
That's like Trey Smith. You know, that's like Noah Gray, who I wrote about this week because they're utilizing more tight end sets, and he did everything for the Chiefs in that opener against Arizona. You're talking about Jalen Watson, who they're going to rely upon tonight in game two of his career to be a starting cornerback in the NFL. So, that's impressive. And again, we know there's some luck involved, and everybody in the front office will tell you there's some luck involved. But when you hit on that many, it sure seems like the process is going right, and at least you have something that is going right where – again, if you are right on that part of it, man, you're set up for success for a long time, and that is such a vital part of being in an NFL front office.
It's very exciting. Oh, boy, Marco's got a big smile on his face. He's nodding his approval. We will take a break. But first, Marco, let me tell you about, I don't know if you remember this, Nate Buchady, but last year the Chargers found themselves in a very hairy situation trying to cover Travis Kelce.
Now just one catch shy of Otis Taylor. Here is Kelce. Still going. Still going. Kelce, good night. Touchdown. Chiefs win it.
Oh, man. Hopefully the Chargers will find themselves in another hairy situation. If you'd like to find yourself in a hairy situation, why not contact Ascentus Hair Restoration and Dr. Spencer Egan? They can help you get your hair back using state-of-the-art robotic hair transplant technology. At Ascentus Hair Restoration, they care about maintaining the hair you have and replacing the hair you've lost. Book your free consultation for a personalized plan and feel like you again. 913-914-5975. 913-914-5975 or visit KansasCityHairTransplant.com.
Oh.
I sat there and listened to a 5-minute tirade from Nate Buchady that started with the NFL draft. And just to let you know that he's consistent on and off the air, it ended, Jesse, I know you were thrilled. It ended with a reference to Sporting Kansas City and how they run things. See?
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I was just waiting to see, because it's all, you know, like, you know where he begins and you know where he ends, but it's always interesting to see how the mouse gets through the maze. Like, how is he going to get to the end? How's this? I'm thinking, how's this going to end up with him making a point about Sporting? And he delivered, didn't he?
Listen, if Herbie Tiopi was sitting here, there'd be a New Orleans Saints siren.
Sure, right.
I've already referenced Remy Martin and Bill Self here talking about the Chiefs.
We're all staying on brand.
We all.
It was good.
You're going to bring up Luther Burden and his potato chips at some point.
No.
You know?
I mean,
Diet Dr. Pepper for us.
And another thing. Yeah. You know, that's, hey, Sporting. Oh, yeah, there it is. But it's incredible. You're the best.
Well, for the record, that wasn't the only team I referenced when we were talking about
it. No, but that was how it ended.
That's where I brought it home.
That's how you brought it home. Now, let's see if the Chiefs are going to bring it home tonight at Arrowhead Stadium.
Can I mention real quick, though,
where will you be?
I'm going to bring it? Yeah, I'm going to bring it if you want to hear soccer takes from me and all kinds of
other things.
I'd
love to. Where can I go?
Yes!
Intrust Bank off of K10 today from 11 to 1. We're doing a season kickoff party. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be food there. Intrust Bank invites you to join us for free lunch. They're calling it Red Thursday today from 11 to 1.
They say there is no free lunch.
Well, I beg to differ.
Okay.
Great food. You can meet the friendly staff there. Enter to win Chiefs tickets and more. Game day giveaways. It's a community appreciation event. I'll be there live on site. So stop by and join us. Intrust Bank, located south of the Embassy Suites at K10 in Ridgeview. So right off, Jesse Newell drives right by it when he's driving on K10. The Embassy Suites just on the south side, K10 of Ridgeview, from 11 to 1 today. And come out, enjoy some free food, sign up to win some prizes, wear your red, say hi to me, and have a good time. And I'll tell you something about Peter Vermees.
And also, shout out to a good friend of the show, Rustin Dodd. There is an interesting piece of The Athletic about the Royals, authored by Rustin Dodd and Alec Lewis. Ooh, boy. All right. The Royals are, I'm just going to be honest, Royals are lucky this is a Chiefs game day or we would be digging in. But there's time for that. Okay, so I want to ask you, we talked about pass rushers. We talked about Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa. And so much has been made about, we talked about storylines also in training camp, much has been made about Orlando Brown Jr., right? And him having the opportunity to go out and, you know, and play for the contract that he wants, since he didn't like the offer that he got from the Chiefs. Well, this is one of those games where he earns his money, right? That he can either put up or shut up. And so I want to, you know, Andrew Wiley, he's not looked upon as a building block. He's, you know, in fact, I feel like people tried to replace him throughout camp, and it just nothing ever materialized. So tell me the importance of the matchup tonight for Orlando Brown Jr. to protect his quarterback against top-shelf pass rushers like Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa.
Yeah, that was one of the discussions earlier this week with Chiefs availability on Tuesday. Is this a kind of a big boy game for Orlando Brown? And even Andy Reid was sort of asked about that and, you know, said it in his Andy Reid way, basically. Yeah, this is what you sign up for. This is where you make that money. And to be honest, probably what happened in the Arizona game was not what I expected out of the two tackles for the Chiefs, because Andrew Wiley was a question mark for the Chiefs on the offensive line, and he did great. And Orlando Brown has sort of been the guy that everybody was wondering was going to be in camp and to solidify that spot. And, you know, he wasn't always great against Arizona. So, again, one game sample. We'll see what happens in this next one. But, yeah, this is it. I mean, if you're – we always hear that banking on yourself, betting on yourself title. I mean, these are the sorts of games, if you're Orlando Brown, to come out and show that you are in good shape, you are worth that type of money, you are worth a long-term contract, and especially against these big names. I mean, don't you think tomorrow we'll be talking at this moment or this time about, what, you know, did Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa impact this game?
Sure.
I mean, isn't that going to be a storyline? And obviously Orlando Brown's going to go a long way toward determining whether that is a storyline and a thing we're talking about tomorrow, or if it's not, and the Chiefs got a victory.
Do you think we'll be talking much about the Chargers' decisions to go for it on fourth down?
I sure hope so. It's my wheelhouse. It's like three chapters of this phone book, of the analytics book. You know, this one sort of frustrates me sometimes because Brandon Staley won them a game against the Chiefs earlier on because of his fourth down decisions. If you remember, he went for one and they got it and were able to run the clock out. But then the ones that fall apart, obviously, are the ones that talk about it. You're talking to a poker player. I mean, to me, this is like blackjack. Like, you go in and you know there's this little chart that they can give you that you can put on your phone. There's a little chart. And if you follow that chart every single time, the casino's not going to make very much money off of you over time. You can play a bunch of hands. You can drink your beer, you know, if you follow it and you know that the numbers are there. But the first time you get 16 and the dealer is showing a 10 and you decide to stand instead of hit and you don't follow the chart and you think you're better than that or you think that this scenario is going to be different, well, that's when the casino starts to put up their lights because they start to take your money just little by little, time after time. So I think Brandon Staley, the process here is good. And I was pointed, Herbie Tuiopi, my partner, pointed this out to me. He's a big fan of Rounders, the poker movie. So I can understand this thinking. But I think these are off-season decisions. I think these are things you look at before, and it's process over result. He thinks he's giving his team a tiny edge. This is the NFL. Tiny edges matter. But by doing this, he thinks he's giving his team a tiny edge. The numbers back him up. Having said all that, you know, I read the Chargers Football Outsiders, you know, basically the nerds like me that wrote the story up on him. I think it was Mike Tanier who wrote it. He did a great job with it if people want to check it out. But he talked about how what Brandon Staley did last year was even at the edge of what, you know, nerdy people would tell him to do. So he's pushing the limit. He's going about as far, and even some of those decisions are questionable, even with the people that say you should go for it a lot. But I think, to me, the process is sound. So will it pay off every instance? No. Will he be questioned after games? Yes. But this is stuff you talk about in May and June and July. And so it was obvious last year they had those discussions. They decided what they were going to do. He went into it. He kept faith in that process. Obviously, the Chargers chartered at the end of the season in many different ways and weren't able to make the playoffs. But again, as a poker guy and as a blackjack guy, I do not fault the process for knowing your chart and sticking with your chart regardless of the circumstances, while knowing and totally believing and putting faith behind that's going to treat you right in the end. So I'm not going to criticize him for that. But again, that's why I got the pocket protector, and that's why I'm joining your show right now. Well, look, I've got the big analytics book.
And that's a good point you make. The question is, do you think, and we won't know until we see it, do you think there's a chance that the tremendous amount of criticism and the fact that they didn't make the playoffs, do you think in the offseason he allowed that to alter his approach at all?
Yes, I think there probably is. And I think there was, I had read on a call, and I would need to study it further, but maybe he took a little bit more passive route in the first game against the Raiders. So absolutely. And I think that's a shame. It kind of reminds me of the Bill Belichick play against the Colts, that big fourth and two. You know what I mean? What happens if the fourth and two gets completed and he gets it? Does everything turn around much quicker? And let's be honest, like, this is not something that is not happening. Like, teams are going for way more on fourth down than they used to. I mean, the last decade has been a complete revolution when it comes to that. So for him to still be an outlier kind of tells you how aggressive that he's been and how much he's thought about this sort of thing. But Steven, I'm totally on board with you. Like, the processes he talked about, and potentially in May, June, and July, they talked about that and said, let's ease off this a little bit. You know, let's not go quite as far. Is that the best decision for the long run? I don't know, because, like I said, the little chart tells you to double down on 11, so I'm going to double down on 11, and maybe that's giving them back a point, but maybe gives them a little bit more job security. Or the bigger picture of this, and we always talk about this with Ned Yost and the Royals, do you have the buy-in from the players,
there
the organization,
go.
The coaches, and everybody else with you? So I think so important nowadays, and I think this is really good, is not only doing something, but explaining the why to people, explaining why you're doing this. I think that Brandon Staley has a very good why, but it has to be explained, and it has to be given to people so that they don't jump off board and so that this organization is all moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's my point on the sometimes, to me, overindulgence on analytics, because to carry on your analogy about the blackjack, those are inanimate cards that are being flipped over that are not going to change based on your decision. Your decision is not going to change whether or not the dealer turns over a five or a six. It's just a five or a six there, right? But when you're playing a sport, you got human beings out there that have to execute the play that you just called. And how much they believe in that play or don't believe in that play can be directly affect the outcome of the performance and the way the other team reacts to it, right? Like all of a sudden that throws so many different dynamics into it. Even things like, okay, the analytics overall say that every team should go for it on fourth down here. But what about our team? You know, do we have a good play on fourth and five? You know, those types of things all come into play as well. In general, I'm with you. Like, I do believe in analytics. Like, I believe that that's – we talked about this whole situation with Nathaniel Hackett's butchering of that game. You need to have an understanding. You need to have guys around you telling you what the probabilities are in general, and some of those numbers can be more accurate than others. And I think it is long overdue that teams go for it on fourth down more often. But if you start to walk that line to where you're further than everybody else, you sure better be able to have that buy-in of your team, right, to say, like, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. We have faith in him. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I do think that's a big factor in if you're going to be one of the Mavericks or whatever you call it in being successful with it.
Yeah, and again, I think it's all about the why and getting your team to buy in on that. And, you know, if you're the Chargers coming in tonight at Arrowhead with the Chiefs, going for more fourth downs, trying to win this game, setting that sort of mentality, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
And I think that there is also a sort of you know, mentality or aggressiveness mindset that you can gain from that if you are basically showing that you are trying to win the game, not just not lose the game.
Yeah, and there's been teams that have come into Arrowhead against Patrick Mahomes that have settled for field goals on fourth and short where I'm going, you think you're beating Patrick Mahomes tonight with field goals? That's blown my mind way more often than what he did. But
I think something also always good to look at is what does the other team want you to do and disappoint them? It's kind of like an old poker thing you do. It's like you look at a guy, you're trying to read them, and think about what they want you to do and then try to do the opposite. And so if every fan in Arrowhead wants you to kick the field goal and not go for the touchdown, you probably should be going for the touchdown.
And that's exactly what was going through my mind watching that game on Monday night. Like every single person in Seattle wants them to try to kick a field goal.
Exactly.
Everybody. Nobody wants to see Russell Wilson running around on fourth and five with a chance to pick up a first down. They want you to try to kick a 64-yarder, you know?
A rule in poker, rule in football. Think about what the other team, other fans want you to do, and then disappoint them.
We will do something that I don't know if people may be disappointed, but we'll come back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You know the summer's over, but that joint pain is still there. It's time to do something about it. Call QC Kinetics, 816-412-6299. You can call today for a free consultation. QC Kinetics can get you moving again with cutting-edge regenerative treatments with no drugs, no downtime, and no surgery. You put it off long enough. It's time to get real lasting relief from chronic pain in your knees and back and shoulder and hips. Lots of people in Kansas City have done it, and now they're living life to the fullest. Don't assume the old ways of dealing with joint pain are the only ways. Call QC Kinetics today for a free consultation. 816-412-6299. That's 816-412-6299. Located off 435 in State Line and in Gladstone. 816-412-6299. QC Kinetics. I know it's Chiefs game day, but here's one little excerpt from this article at The Athletic. If these stud pitchers, Kowar, Lynch, Singer, all these guys, had been with the Dodgers or Rays or Guardians, they would be very, very good, said one rival pro scout. But unfortunately, they haven't been taught how to move well. They haven't been introduced to the metrics that give them an idea of how they can pitch most effectively. It goes on from there. Oh, jeez. I got some reading after the show. Okay, then, Jesse Newell, what we need from you is to tell us, look into your crystal ball, please, and tell us how this game is going to play out tonight. What do you expect from Chiefs-Chargers Episode 1?
Yeah, so I'm starting to question myself here a little bit. I did a prediction earlier this week, but Bet California sent me an interesting email about these Thursday night games, how they change things up, and we know that teams look a little bit sloppier sometimes on these Thursday night games. Makes sense, obviously. But It says here, according to them, in the history of Thursday Night Football, totals of 54.5 points or higher are 7-0 on the under.
Yeah, that's Marco's stat.
That's the stat.
Pounding his chest for some reason, pointing at you now.
So, you know, I'm not expecting 7-5. I mean, that's not what you're looking at. But, you know, I have 31-28 Chiefs. I think it's a close game. Arrowhead, you just can't underrate in these sort of circumstances. You hear from opposing, you know, players and coaches how intimidating it can be, especially on these sort of night games, especially a season opener. I think Herbert's really good. I think he's going to still have some success. But, you know, the big thing to me, the glaring weakness for the Chargers is run defense, and they know it. The Chiefs ran the ball well in the first game. So that could point to the under, too, if the Chiefs go back under center, get some power game going, and let their offensive linemen eat. If that happens, then maybe a lower scoring game than you expect, but the Chiefs still coming out on top.
So if it's 31-28, both teams get four touchdowns, and then there's a game-winning field goal. Does it come down to the end? Is it Matt Amendola kicking a game-winning field goal, and then and a few months from now we're looking back and going, hey, do you remember the name of that kid that kicked the field goal to win it against the Chargers on Thursday Night Football?
Yeah, trying to think of all these random kickers that have been brought in for the Chiefs for, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, yeah. The Shane Grahams of the world. And Matt Amendola, Oklahoma State kid, I've seen him kick a lot because he used to kick against Kansas when they were not very good. I looked it up. In a two-game stretch, he had 13 extra points in games I covered that he played against Kansas.
No, he can nail
that one. I know that he can make extra points, but yeah, that is an interesting subplot to this game as well, obviously. Come on, kid. Here you go. Game's on the line. Make that field goal. But they're going to rely on him tonight, and I'm sure the Chiefs are hoping that Buck will be back for next week.
My guess is Andy Reid, they're not going to settle for a 64-yarder, but if they're in a situation where they got to kick a mid-range field goal at the end of the game, they're probably going to handle it just like they expect him to make the kick, right? Or do you think they'll really drastically change their game plan because of him?
Well, the drastic change is just that, you know, we've seen Butker kick like 73-yarders in warm-ups. And again, so that gives maybe a coach confidence. Hey, if it's the end of the game and it's really, really long, you can try a long one. Probably don't have that faith with Matt Amendola, but no, I mean, if you're 50 and in and you need to kick a field goal, I think you're doing it. You're trusting the guy. And listen, if you trust in an NFL game your safety to go out and make kicks, you certainly are going to trust a specialist like Matt Amendola to come in and do the same thing as well.
That is Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star, covering the Chiefs like a blanket. Jesse, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Look forward to the soccer and KU basketball discussion like we always do with Chiefs.
That's right. And we'll look forward to seeing what parlays pay off for Marco as angry emailers criticize his obsession with DraftKings Sportsbook. But we love it on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.